Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the April 29th, 2012 edition of Don't Let It Go Unheard. It's the podcast devoted to the discussion of news and politics from the perspective of Ayn Rand's philosophy, objectivism. I'm your host, Amy Peikoff, and I suggest you get your Alka-Seltzer ready because these are the topics that we are going to discuss today. First up, more of Obama's nihilism with respect to the office of the president itself. We all know he's a nihilist in general, but something that we talked about a bit last week from New York and that we'll talk about this week is how he displays that nihilism with respect to the office of the president. This week we saw him slow jam the news with Jimmy Fallon. Well, some of us saw it. Bosch said he couldn't watch it, so I took one for the team today.
I can't watch him. I can't listen to him. I can't.
Yeah.
If I can avoid it.
And then the other is his White House Correspondents' Dinner speech with humor so tasteless that it's something that I would never even discuss except for the fact that he did it. Second story, Apple's being criticized for avoiding taxes, and it's not surprising that it's being published by the liberal New York Times. But I was surprised to see that it was featured prominently. This story was featured prominently on the Drudge Report. Matt Drudge is supposed to be some sort of conservative. What does this say about the culture, how far we still have to go? We'll talk about that. Big surprise, health insurance premiums are going up. I got a little thing about that. And then, because you really take your Alka-Seltzer and you want to get the best use and the most bang for your buck, we will talk about a proposed law in Egypt, thanks to the Islamic majority there in the government, the so-called farewell intercourse law, and more. Okay? So, first of all, what Bosch could not even bring himself to watch, which was the president pretty much, you know, trashing the office of the president this week, Obama. Earlier this week, April 24th, I believe it was, I posted the link on the Don't Let It Go Unheard page on Facebook, so you can see it there if you missed it. Barack Obama went on Jimmy Fallon's show and did something that I guess is a regular feature of the show called Slow Jamming the News. And it was about, you know, the topic of the news story that they slow jammed. And really, what is slow jamming? Slow jamming, as I gathered just from watching this one segment, is they play some kind of, you know, slow rhythm and blues music, and then they kind of talk over it and go, and all kinds of stupid stuff. They were talking about the student loan interest rate increase that has been the issue he's been pounding. Obama's been pounding this issue for the last week.
It's his issue. It's not as important as he likes it to be. We have major issues, but that's his pet issue right now that he's pushing. You know, pet issue, you know.
Yeah.
Obama and pets, you know. Anyway.
It's the issue that he's been talking about. And again, it's one of these very minor issues, but it's one where he thinks he's going to get a lot of points towards reelection. So what has he been doing? He's been touring college campuses, and of course, he's been telling all of these college students that, you know, the evil Republicans are going to be responsible for letting the student loan interest rates increase in July, unless, of course, you reelect the beneficent Barack Obama, right? So this is the issue, and it's really a non-issue because, you know, when Mitt Romney was asked about it, he said, well, given the fact that Barack Obama has created such a disgusting job market for college graduates, that he too is in favor of keeping the student loan interest rate where it is for another period of time. And apparently the only difference between the Republicans and the Democrats on this issue is that the Republicans want to make up for this continued decrease in student loan rates, which is a subsidy given to college students. You know, the Republicans want to make up for this by actually cutting spending someplace else. What a concept, right? But, you know, Obama just wants the money to come from thin air and print it, or China or whatever. He, you know, a further increase in the debt ceiling, all those wonderful things. And so he just, you know, wants to make it a campaign issue, and the money's going to materialize somehow, and that's it. So he goes on Jimmy Fallon. This is the issue that they want to talk about. And in the little clip, which, I, like I said, again, you can see the link on the Don't Let It Go Unheard page on Facebook, or if you just Google Jimmy Fallon Obama Slow Jam the News, I'm sure you'll find it. It's on YouTube. He says, he calls Obama, instead of President of the United States, he calls him the Preezy of the United Steezy. That's cute, right?
Yeah.
Obama, of course, took the opportunity during his little slow jamming of the news, which essentially he was being the straight man for most of it. So he was just spitting
out his usual campaign speech. I saw, he was so uncomfortable. His eyes, he was so uncomfortable. As Zach says here, it wasn't even funny.
Yeah.
You know, it was not funny about it. It was embarrassing. And then also Zach said that he tweeted, Obama slow jammed while America burns. And that's exactly the point. We are in a terrible, terrible state, and this guy is going on.
Yeah, he's going and having fun on comedy shows, right, and doing these things. No, I did think he was rather stiff on that show. I didn't think that his delivery was that great.
Well, his delivery is never great, no matter what. And, you know, people try to say he's cool.
This
cool
is the thing. You did not watch his delivery at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. His delivery was actually pretty good as these things go.
Don't say that.
I'm sorry to tell you that. But it was so disgusting. It was so disgusting that, maybe the reason his delivery was so good was that he knew coming in there that he had hit such a blow to the office of the president that he was all proud of himself. I have no idea.
People, you know, pretend that, he likes making fun of himself. No, he's not making fun of himself. He has no self. He's making fun of the presidency of the United States of America. That's what he's making fun of. And that's why he can do it so smoothly, I guess, as you said. He loves it.
That's right.
They lap it up.
No, it is a good point. Because how can you make fun of yourself if you have no self? So in his little slow jam of the news of Fallon, which I guess is just a warm-up for this correspondence dinner, he made a little side comment to taxing billionaires, of course, you know, because, I mean, nobody relates to billionaires, so it's okay to go ahead and slam them and talk about taxing them. Fallon calls Obama the Barackness monster.
Were they kissing when this was happening?
May as well have been, right? But when he calls him the Barackness monster, then they're talking about...
The Barackness monster? I mean...
I don't know. I mean, but this...
They were Fallon in love? I mean, they were...
Fallon in love. This is the kind of language that comedians might use about a president, not in his presence. But you think, here is Fallon right there with the president of the United States calling him the Barackness monster.
They're all in on it. It's just...
Yeah. So then another little jab that was made during this Fallon slow jam was they were talking about if the Republicans didn't do what Obama wanted, they're going to feel it, Buster. And they have a little guy singing in the background, they're going to feel it, Buster, you know, whatever. And then they talk about POTUS, you know, and Fallon says that's why he's the POTUS.
Yeah.
And he purposefully forgot what POTUS stands for.
Who purposely forgot?
Fallon.
Okay.
It was like person on top of, and he purposefully forgot. And then Obama says, it means president of the United States, as if, right? So, you know, and then it's this, oh, yeah. Oh, and at the end, Obama says, oh, yeah, in this completely non-dignified way. So the whole point is, you know, with this purposefully forgetting what POTUS stands for, calling him the Barackness monster, the crazy of the mocking. United Steezy, it's just mocking the office of the United States.
It ought to be the most powerful office on the earth, and they're like, well, we can mock it. That's our target.
Yeah.
Bring it down.
Now, we had some people in the chat room who obviously watched it. As you said, Zach said it wasn't even funny.
No.
He says the slow jam was so embarrassing. It was just blatant propaganda, and it wasn't even funny. And then
someone said he sounded. Deborah said he sounded angry to her. I mean, he looked He looked off.
He looks
again,
angry
sorry.
When he's demanding something.
I didn't watch
he definitely
it.
Does.
I refused to watch it, but I think it was a clip or something. For a split second, I was like, okay. His eyes looked, you know, he really uncomfortable.
You know, that he is angry, I think, whenever
he's angry
he
in general.
Is anticipating not getting his way.
Oh, yeah.
Or it could be some sort of...
Or if the dog meat is too hard, too tough. I mean, he gets really angry. He said, listen, he goes to restaurants and complains.
The other thing is he might be putting on anger on behalf of all the poor students whose loans are...
True.
You know, so
he'll play it up.
It could be kind of a put-on anger.
Yeah, he'll play it up.
Deborah in the chat room says that Obama is like selfishness without a self. Yeah, so the idea that he could be self-deprecating.
Exactly. Deborah says, you mean you can't imagine George Washington doing a slow jam? Exactly right. You know, the nature of a George Washington. And it's not even the modern era.
Yeah.
It's not even the 2012. It's not even that. It's the nature of the man and what he's wanted to do to this office.
Well, and I have some questions about that in a bit, right? Because obviously I cannot imagine George Washington doing a slow jam.
Can't imagine any other president, really.
It is also true that a slow jam did not exist in George Washington's time.
Yeah, but hold on.
So.
The president is being the president of the United States of America. He's not being a late night tool for the enemies of America, because our enemies love this. And, you know, our enemies would do this. So, of course, Barack Obama is one of our enemies. Man, it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, they would love it. So I thought that was bad. And I was expressing outrage about this earlier this week on the Don't Let It Go Unheard page on Facebook, and people were chiming in. And I don't know if people really jump on my, you know, idea of this is nihilism. But I just see this as one example of his broader nihilism.
Exactly right. That's the whole point. You know, this is a continuum. He's always doing this. Every single day he's insulting us in some way. America. Every single day. So you add all that. You accumulate it all. There is a continuum. This is a guy who wants to bring us down.
And it's like
in every way.
With respect to every detail. He is making sure that
diminish.
This nihilist approach is.
And again, when you get a mediocre like him at the highest office on Earth, this is I guess natural, you know.
Yeah, will it remain the most powerful office on Earth after Obama's done with it?
If it's up to him, no.
Right, and there's a lot more that he has. Anyway, so I thought I was upset about that, and then I read the story about what he did at the White House Correspondents' Dinner last night and how he opened it, because I guess he comes on first, and before he came on whoever the little press secretary guy is, what's his name, it's not Carney or something,
he comes out there
and they do this joke of, you know, he's got this that Obama's got this live mic on him backstage, and can somebody turn it off, the mic is live. And then Obama's supposedly backstage, supposedly talking about how he hates to be there at this correspondence dinner, and how dare he, who has nuclear codes, be opening, for Jimmy Kimmel. And
that's the only, I guess, spot on thing he said.
Yeah.
You know.
Joking about nuclear codes is probably not that good either.
Of course not.
But, you know, and then he says, and the cast of Glee and the director, blah, blah, blah. And then when he's going to go out there and he's making a few more jokes, you hear, no joke, a toilet flush.
Yeah.
So the whole idea is you're supposed to have just been listening to the President of the United States sitting on the toilet.
And toilet humor.
So the president now is reducing everything to bathroom humor.
Yep.
It's not just slow jamming the news, but it's bathroom humor coming
this
from the president.
This just tells you in a lot of ways how in trouble he is with his campaign. I mean, seriously, how really in trouble he is, because he has to keep covering it up somehow, some way, doing things that make him that pretend that he's fine with what's going on with his campaign. No, it's not. Another mediocre like Romney might actually beat him. You know, probably will now.
So now Robert says that Kimmel actually properly bashed him.
I heard that.
So that's good.
Well, Kimmel has said that Obama, there's nothing funny about Obama. So in order to, you know, I guess have some cred in the comedy, you know, community, he said, okay, well, I got to get you a little here, a little there. Do you mind? Probably. Okay, no. You know what I mean? They probably talked it over. I said, do you mind if I do that? Because, I mean, I got to bring something in. I got to keep some cred. So I don't know if he, you know, properly bashed him. You know, Robert said properly. I think he would actually Because if he properly bashed him, he probably would have got him for so many things. And just, you know, until Kimmel got the hook, you know. But whatever. Because there are so many good ways to actually, you know, really mock Obama. I know. I mean, I'm doing it for years.
You spend a lot of time doing it. It's true. Other lowlights of his discussion were, you know, typical joke about where he was born, and he winks when he says he was born in Hawaii. He joked several times about dogs, and a couple times explicitly, very explicitly, about eating dogs. So he mentioned Sarah Palin apropos of nothing, and then he says, oh, speaking of Sarah Palin, what's the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? And then he says, a pit bull is delicious.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
I mean, it is disgusting. And then, can I just say that, you know,
yeah.
Peter just condemned him.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And what's that one follow-up I will say? And Islam means peace. You know, the...
the day that PETA condemned
him. Yeah, the man-hating animals, you know, behind PETA, you know, they have nothing to say because they're leftists. He's a leftist. So, therefore, it's like eating dog is terrible unless you're a dog-eating president who happens to be a leftist. And of course, black president. And, well, half-black president. And I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah.
And sorry, John Lovitz did, truthfully now, not just mock him, but dead on in a good way.
No, he's criticizing him for the right reason.
And he's doubling down, which is good. You know, Kimball will make a joke of it, and he'll slap him on the back. And, you know, because Kimball's, as far as I know, he's an idiot leftist as well. No matter if he's quote-unquote funny and all that.
Zach in the chat room says, that begs the question, which we'll talk about, is that how would Obama know what a hockey mom tastes like? Yeah, so that was another aspect of it that was disgusting. So that there was that implication.
So it's kind of okay.
But first of all, Zach, begs the question, you're using it improperly. This is one of my pet peeves of the world. Begs the question is the logical fallacy that means to use circular reasoning. So if somebody begs the question, he is assuming as part of his proof the conclusion that he's trying to prove. So as Derek in the chat room is just typing in right now, what you mean is that raises the question. Just a second, 99% of the time that I see begs the question used in the media, people mean raises the question. And this includes on Red Eye, as some of you, if you were troopers and listened to the horrible sound last week, we ended up meeting Greg Gutfeld and hanging out with him for a couple hours, and then he invited us to go watch the taping of Red Eye.
We're literally 10 feet away from the set. Well, we were in that room.
Well, we were in the green room beforehand. We got to talk to Penn Jillette, and we also got to talk to Ambassador John Bolton, which was really cool.
I got to call out Penn Jillette again, by the way, about his silence on Islam. It was fun.
Yeah. But then we got to watch the taping. And during Red Eye on Monday, they actually used raises the question properly, which I was happy, because there was a time a week and a half before when they had used begs the question in the improper way. And, you know, all the stuff that they have, the text on the show that's put through the teleprompter, it isn't all necessarily written by Greg Gutfeld himself. Gutfeld, I think, does some of the writing, but they have a few different writers who put all that show together. Right. And by the way, the taping of that show is super efficient.
Yes,
it's done in less than an hour. Yep. So, you know, all that time, but there's very little time between segments.
It happened to be a great show in particular.
Yeah,
I mean, not just because we were there, but you got John Bolton, you had
Penn Jillette.
Penn Jillette. I mean, and Penn Jillette and Greg seemed to be very, very friendly.
Yeah.
It was good. Very good.
Definitely. So, yeah.
And sorry, just one thing. John Bolton, I got a chance to – I introduced myself as a guy who drew the John Bolton 2012 poster, and he remembered it. And he said he's going to hang it up in his, I guess, home or office, whatever. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, that'll be great if so. And I love when people take your artwork because it's a big thing for somebody to take your artwork and hang it up in a frame in your home. Very nice stuff. By the way, there's cool art you can get on Bosch's website,
yes.
Faustin.blogspot.com. But we we digress. Okay, we're done. So that was one of the dog eating jokes, and then the other dog eating joke later in the little monologue, he said, "Oh, his stepdad always told him it's a boy eat dog world." disgusting. And I mean, he made no effort to disavow the dog eating at all.
No, you know what? I mean, in one sense, he's, I mean, people say he's smart. He's really stupid because he's keeping this dog thing alive. He's keeping this dog eating story alive. I mean, he is.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, and it's on Drudge. Drudge has millions and millions. So let's just say someone maybe had missed it last week. This guy's keeping it alive like an idiot. You know, Romney isn't even writing it anymore.
No.
So he's just really stupid.
No, and he also played during his little monologue some supposed ad about, you know, it was a spoof on a Republican commercial that was criticizing the way Obama handled a dog versus him. And it showed, you know, Bo in the limousine versus, and then at the very end of the spoof commercial, they put a crate on top of an airplane as if you're going to have
the dog in the crate. Or?
Yeah, they didn't even mention eating dog in the entire thing. Of course. But, you know, what else did he do? He joked about his radical conspiracy-ridden second-term agenda, so he was basically...
You mean he'll make Bill Ayers his vice president? You mean like that?
Stuff like that,
yeah.
as ridiculous, you know. And then he did, of course, take pot shots at Romney. He said, you know, Romney had so much money that the ballroom that they were having this extravagant banquet in was a fixer-upper for Romney, that kind of stuff.
How much does Obama intend to blow on his campaign? $1 billion. Right?
How much do they just blow on a vacation?
Yeah.
So, I mean, come on. Now, here's another joke, and you tell me whether you think this is also in the inappropriate category. He talked.
Well, it's inappropriate that he's president, but go on.
Yeah, but he talked about Hillary Clinton drinking beer in Colombia, and he was saying, well, you know, look how far I've come in 4 years. 4 years ago, we were having this, you know, horrible, vicious campaign between, you know, me versus Hillary Clinton. And now she won't stop drunk texting me from Cartagena.
I don't know. I mean, it's not funny.
No.
It's a cheap shot of her, I guess. I mean.
But I mean, talking about the Secretary of State drinking and drunk texting.
Well, I mean, you know, he's, I think really because it's Obama, because he's so destructive, because he's hurting us, he's really hurting us, that for him to make jokes at our expense, at the country's expense, that's what's terrible about it. I mean, that really is. If you got a good president, they can go there and get roasted, and it'll be funny. A guy who loves the country, a guy who does a good job as president, that's fine. This guy, I mean, you know, at least he took a break from destroying the country. But then again, he was still taking pot shots at us, so.
Right.
Yeah, you know, so I don't know.
The other thing he joked about was celebrity attendees, Kim Kardashian and the cast of Glee, stuff like that. So just kind of trying to show he's oh so cool. Remember last week, one of the things that we were criticizing him for, because we thought he was demeaning the office of the president, was his need to answer Matt Damon's criticism.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what a hack.
Now, we haven't seen him answer Lovitz.
Yeah.
We have not seen that, but maybe he will. Who knows?
And Lovitz, you know, he confessed that he voted for Obama, but he's pissed off.
And we have a call. Someone who wants to talk about our topic. Let's get on here. Hello, who's this? Hello? Oh, I think we lost our caller.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Oh, now I can hear you. Who's this?
This is Debbie. Hi.
Oh, hey,
Debbie.
So what do you think of our dear president?
Unbelievable. I had not heard of these jokes at the press correspondents' dinner. The only thing that I read about in the news was like the least scandalous part, when he made a comment about having to get the Secret Service home in time for their new curfew or something. And like that was the part that I saw all over the news, which really wasn't that bad. I did not know about the toilet humor and this. You know, he just really seems like he's trying to seem cool to the young people, like talking about how Hillary's drunk texting him from Cartagena. And it makes him look like some kind of a, I don't know, like a drunken frat boy or something.
He's obviously pandering. By the way, if you want to read the story, and there's actually within the story a link to the video of the entire little monologue that he does, if you dare subject yourself to it, it's on Blaze. It's a website called The Blaze, and it was posted on April 29th, so 7:06 a.m.
Wow.
You know what, but yeah. Debbie brings up something about the fact that he's trying to be cool in front of, for the youth, and that's his last bastion. I mean, that's his last hope. You know, ignorant, young kids who just turned 18 who might vote for him. And there might be a good number of them. So that's the last hope, because, you know, he could fool them. He can't fool people who voted for him already, non-leftists who voted for him already, and those who voted for him when they were younger. They're 4 years older now. So those are the ones that he could still fool, and that's why he's probably riding it so hard.
The ones who are going to think bathroom humor is funny or something.
Oh, he's so cool. You know.
Here's a question for you, Deborah. Is presidential decorum an actual value? Is it a value that is being destroyed by Obama, or am I just some kind of prude?
I mean, that's
no,
I
think you're right. I mean, I think it does matter because it represents something. He's the, you know, the elected leader of, now he shouldn't in a proper society have nearly as much power as he does, but he's still kind of a figurehead, and he does represent all of us in a, you know, in that sense. And it says a lot about the country if there's this slob making obscene toilet jokes and saying that the Secretary of State is drunk texting him and laughing about the fact that he ate dog and the fact that that offended people. Yeah. And this is the president, and he's the what did Jimmy Fallon call him? The Prizzy of the United Stizzy or something?
Yeah,
the
Prizzy of the United Steezy.
Oh, my God. No, I definitely agree with you, Amy. It does something to you to see the president of the United States behaving that way. That was kind of what I meant when I made that comment about how George Washington wouldn't do a slow jam. Because not just because of the technology, right? But like if George Washington were like a contemporary of us and he were around in modern times, I just can't imagine somebody with that kind of stature doing something so small. And
very petty, yeah.
Would you predict that if a Romney gets elected, that he would bow to this level because now Barack Obama has set the precedent, so he's going to feel like he's got to do junk like this as well, and because he's not a thinker.
One thing I say, he's not, but he's not a lowlife either.
He's not naturally a lowlife, but do you think
Obama's
he's going to be pushed into it?
Obama's a lowlife. He is. I mean, he absolutely is. And he puts on this front, and it's all a front. I mean, he tries to look presidential at times. He tries, you know, but he's a lowlife. I mean, he is. I mean, look at his ideas. Look, he's friends with an unrepentant terrorist, Bill Ayers. I mean, what more do you have to know? But anyway, I'm sorry. Go on.
So, you know, someone on Facebook was comparing this way that they opened his little monologue at the correspondence dinner with old episodes of Archie Bunker. And I think Archie Bunker is kind of a bit before my time. I think there were reruns of Archie Bunker on when I was a kid, but I don't really remember this clearly. But what they used to do was that they would call for Archie, and then you'd hear a toilet flush, and then he'd come in. That's what this guy was saying on Facebook. So this is like some sort of humor that's kind of out in the culture, you know, that you hear a toilet flush before the person enters. Yeah, but so is the idea that, you know, Archie Bunker, this is old-time humor that all these White House correspondents grew up with. They know it. It's been sort of accepted in our culture. So this just makes it okay now for our president to behave this way? Is it just, we're in 2012, so, Amy, you just need to grow up. You know, you're too much of a prude.
There's no
and
standards anymore, zero. And he wants to tear them down. Any standards that we had, he wants to destroy it by the time it's done.
You get the question, right? Is it just that times are changing and I'm too much of a prude about certain types of humor, or is this really gone beyond the pale?
Derek has a good comment here. He goes, the British staged comedy plays during the American Revolution with someone playing Washington to mock and satire him. Obama participated willingly.
Yeah, so it's a contrast, yeah.
Our enemies mock us,
Well, you know. it's one thing if on Saturday Night Live you have somebody playing Obama.
Exactly, but
you have someone like Fallon going, the Prezi of the United States.
But the actual president
to have him really there. So what do you think, Deborah? I mean, is this just the times are changing, there's different humor, and I'm just supposed to accept it, or is this a dangerous trend in a sense?
I think the fact that this is different humor that somehow is accepted to some degree is a symptom of a problem, and I don't think you're being prudish at all. I mean, if I were in Barack Obama's position, I wouldn't embrace the toilet humor and, like, sort of bring myself down to its level. I mean, of course, Barack Obama's already below that level, but, like, if it were someone else, like a rational human being, I would want to try to raise the standard back up and be more classy and dignified than the sort of lowest common denominator of the culture called for. That's what the president of the United States should do. I mean, and I think that someone like that should be kind of inspiring and classy, and not, I don't think it's possible for someone to be inspiring and classy with a toilet flushing in the background.
I mean, certainly Ronald Reagan could be funny without being disgusting.
Absolutely, he was.
Yeah, and I could not see him doing this for instance.
Never.
No way.
So, I don't know. I mean, there are people who think I'm prude. Zach, for instance, who I think is still here in the chat room with us.
I think actually we have to kick him out because he said, begs a question. I had to.
Oh, you had to kick him out. No,
People were calling for it, actually. I said, kick Zach out. Yeah.
Not at all. but Zach, basically, I think he did not think that I was the capable of coming up with that joke on April Fool's Day.
He assumed, I think, it was me.
Yeah,
right.
But he was wrong. That was me. So I don't think I'm that much of a prude.
No, look.
But I just hate this bathroom humor in any context.
Absolutely.
In any context, I hate it.
Exactly. I have something in Propaganda, my blog collection. It was a companion to The Infidel, right? It's a poster of Super Jihad. Like Uncle Sam saying, you know, I need you for the U.S. Army, but it's Super Jihad saying, we need you to submit. And Pigman has taken he's busy fighting Jihad. He has to go to the bathroom, so he might as well go near the poster. And I'm not explicit about it, but I say the call, .. of nature. And it's Pigman. And Amy's not crazy about this stuff.
That is my least favorite.
And that's
favorite.
As far as I go with that type of stuff also. But, I mean, he is a pig. I mean, you know, Pigman. But anyway.
I hijacked your phone call, Deborah. Did you have a different point that you wanted to make?
No, it's okay. I just, kind of along the lines of the youth vote, someone had been trying to sort of understand. I wish I could remember who it was. It was some kind of article maybe or a blog that I read a while back, and I can't recall, but they were talking about the youth vote, like understanding how it is that they support Barack Obama, and the person said, well, imagine watching him speak and turn the sound off. He looks pretty good. And that just made me think, like, it's almost like that's how certain segments of the young people see him. Like, none of the ideas get in, and the meaning of what he's saying and doing doesn't get in. They just see someone who somehow looks, quote-unquote, cool, which is sort of a nebulous concept at best.
Right.
And they just don't really think, like, the information doesn't get in somehow, so they just vote for him based on their impression of him being cool. I mean, I know there were people who voted for him, and I heard some women calling into a talk show one time saying that they were going to vote for him, this was like in 2008 or 2007, because, quote, he's hot. Now, I don't think he's attractive at all.
I mean, he's extremely unattractive.
But
he was called a metrosexual the old day, and that, I mean, he is the very definition of that. I mean, he really is. He's not masculine. I mean, he's not a man in that sense. He's not. He doesn't come off like it. You know, and then remember a few years ago, they tried to have him walking out of the gym with his shirtless. And this one, actually, a male news guy said, he had glistening pecs. It's no joke. I mean, it's incredible.
No, I think metrosexual is pretty apt. But, you know, to me, he's so thin and scrawny looking, too.
Yeah.
Ugh.
No, he looks weak, and he has those big floppy ears. He just looks really he looks like a clown. He really does.
No, he's not attractive.
Here's the thing, too. I mean, other than just, you know, decently pleasant and professional to look at, I don't look at presidents as, oh, are they hot, and that's why I'm going to vote for them. I mean, this is a ridiculous standard anyway, that they're cool, that they're hot, that they're funny, you know?
Exactly. That's the caliber of the people who vote for Obama, though.
These
it's just
term.
Disturbing to me that exists. And
There used to be a term, you know, presidential. You know, he's absolutely is anti-presidential. I mean, you know, whatever that term is defined as, he is truly fighting that in every way.
Now, poor Zach in the chat room thinks that we're hammering him too hard. But I only did the last because you hammered me for not having, right. I guess, a good sense of humor. I don't know.
You got a great sense of humor.
I have a decent sense of humor, but maybe not on this show enough, and I think that's the problem.
Again, you know what? And everything behind this, whatever we feel about all this heavy humor, again, this is the president of the United States of America mm-hmm. at a time where we are in deep trouble as a country. And that just, you know, he's just mocking it all, laughing it up.
And there is, of course, the general comment that people will make about the White House Correspondents' Dinner in many years of our nation's history, which is the nation is suffering, the job market is disgusting, you know, the dollar is plummeting, the stock market, everything. And here they are in this glamorous ballroom setting. They're wearing tuxedos and gowns and just living it up, eating a very expensive meal, pretending as if we're not all suffering. And this is a comment I saw both from Scott Halloran on Facebook today and then also a couple people on the Don't Let It Go on Her page.
The indifference about what the country's going through in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And Steve says here, the reason he is disgusting is because he does not inspire us to be our best. And in a real, real sense, we're not proud that he's our president. And that does mean something at times. I mean, it really does. I mean, Reagan at times, you know, when you were younger, you took it for granted. He was, you knew that he was a tough guy and our enemies were afraid of him. That was important. And we were proud that he was our president at times. I mean, sometimes, whatever. But it's not just not being proud of him. You're disgusted that he's the president.
You're ashamed.
You are ashamed.
You're ashamed. Mm-hmm. I mean,
as a people, as a country, it's shameful that he's our president.
You know, in general, and there was discussion in the chat room about this, and I wanted to go ahead and give credit where it's due. The first person that I knew of to tag Obama definitively as a nihilist and not a socialist or a communist, et cetera, was Leonard Peikoff. And he's been working on this book, The Dim Hypothesis, that's coming out this fall. And he classifies Obama as an egalitarian nihilist. Nihilists in general are defined as people who reject the idea of objective value, who act to destroy values. And Obama has shown time and again that he is prepared to destroy values for the sake of so-called equality. And you know, to be clear, he means equality in results. He doesn't mean equality in so-called opportunity. Everybody has the opportunity to go out there and make of his life what he can, and the government needs to get out of the way. He means equality. In speech after speech, he means equality of result. If you don't get the result that he thinks you should have, which is some basic bargain, you know, where it's like you have a decent living and a little bit of savings for college for your kids and a little bit of retirement and maybe you can go on a vacation. He has an idea of what you deserve, and you should at least get that, but you're supposed to get it as a matter of course, regardless of whether you deserve it. But, you know, I think this is just one more example of his nihilism. Not only is he destroying all the values in America, it includes this office of the president, and he's done it time and time again. And so this week we just saw it in its most obnoxious and disgusting way.
No, that's a great point. And, you know, one thing also, he does give hope. He gives hope to any American that they could be president. I mean, truly, in this sense, anybody can become president. I mean, anybody, meaning friends with people who are friends with terrorists, people who have bathroom humor, anything goes, and that's probably also part of it. And he does give hope. It's like bad, terrible comic artists, like, you know, example, Rob Liefeld. He gives hope to bad, terrible comic artists that they can become actual professionals.
Right.
You know, in that sense, no standards, no nothing, no values.
Well, we've seen also in the chat room here, someone named Eros with the zero at the end is quoting from Ellsworth Toohey, one of Rand's characters. And he says, you know, the chat room is moving pretty quick. I lost my text here. He says, oh, come now. We must never lose our sense of humor. Nothing's really sacred but a sense of humor.
Right.
And he says that sums up Obama. But another thing
that – laugh at the good. Laugh at
– Well, and elevate the mediocrities
right.
in order to make
right.
those who are truly great
absolutely right.
seem lesser by comparison.
Right.
And I'm not quoting that, you know, exactly, but this is something else that comes out of him.
And that's so, what happens when you get a mediocrity in the White House.
You know,
on this level.
If you think also, I mean, you know, besides these media appearances where, and also where he goes and he panders to the sports audiences, right?
Right,
and
right.
The answering Matt Damon and now flushing.
Back at you.
Back at you, Matt Damon. No, but here's the other things that he has done to demean the office of the president. How about the bowing to the Saudi king?
Right, absolutely right.
Right?
Absolutely
apologizing
true. America bowing.
Apologizing for America everywhere, refusing to stand up for America.
Actually, when he went in Japan, he tried to apologize for Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and they did not want him to. You know, Japan did not. Japan was looking out for us in that sense, you know. Said, whoa. I mean, you know, we're good now, and it was what it was, and we, Pearl Harbor, whatever. They had to put him a check.
Well,
and
the people who were defeated in Japan because of the nuclear strikes are not the people who are in power today
exactly
and prospering
right
in Japan.
And, you know, just one example, and John David Lewis brought up in his book, and, you know, one Japanese individual said, no, he called the atomic bombs gifts from heaven. That's all. Just, the nature of that person who says, okay, we were suicidal. We wanted to bring everything down, and that brought us back to reality. And it did.
Yeah. So what do you think, Deborah? Is he doing a good job of destroying the office of president or what?
Unfortunately, yes. I think that Bosch's comment might not be completely accurate, that anything goes and anyone can be president, because I don't know if right now a decent human being could be president.
Right.
You know? But,
Nobody decent, it seems. And, you know, there was some discussion in the chat room as well about Paul Ryan. And,
wait, Ron Paul Ryan?
Yeah. Paul Ryan was one of the people that we hoped was one of the better ones. And we have seen him over the last few years make arguments clearly depending on Rand's ideas.
Not on Catholicism, on objectivism.
Yeah. And now explicitly rejecting her.
Political power.
Yeah, just for political reasons.
Just to get up the ladder of politics.
Yeah, so it just shows you how early it still is, you know?
And he's one of the better ones.
So, anything else before we zoom on to the next story, Deborah?
No, that's it.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. We actually do have another caller that we're going to try and take here because someone flashed the question sign. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Luke.
Luke?
Hello?
Luke.
Yes.
Hi,
Luke,
I can hear you.
Okay. I know you want to move on. You're probably running out of time, but I did want to make a couple other points about the correspondence dinner thing.
Of course.
That's okay.
Of course. Yes.
There was just one thing that you guys didn't mention. The hot mic thing at the beginning, what he was referring to by doing that, what he was trying to make fun of, was the incident that happened a week or two ago
where
he got caught by a hot mic with Medvedev.
Right.
Where he says to Medvedev something like, give me time, I'll have a little more flexibility after my next election. And Medvedev says, I'll transmit that to Vladimir, and I stand with you.
And he thinks he can cancel it out by making fun of it, but he can't. You know, he can't.
Right, and I mean, it's him sharing a secret with when it really comes down to it, with the enemy. I know, I mean, Russia, it's complicated, but when it comes down to it, I think I'm comfortable saying the enemy.
Absolutely.
That he can't share with the American people, and then he can just make it into a joke, and then it's okay.
Right.
You know?
No, good point.
So that was one of the worst parts about the dinner, I thought.
Right.
And then
did. You thought that was even worse than the toilet flush.
Well, the toilet...
Well, yeah, because...
I have to be careful what I say, actually, because I'm in the military, but said so I can't insult the president.
Okay.
I don't... There are a lot of things I didn't like about that dinner. The another one that I thought was really bad was at the beginning. He says, "We're gathered here on this historic 1-year anniversary of when we brought one of the world's most notorious individuals to justice."
Right.
And of course, it's the 1-year anniversary of Osama being killed, and he puts up a picture of Donald Trump.
That's right.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
That's right.
And I thought, well, so you thought that was really terrible too.
It was.
Well, I mean, I don't know. That should be one thing that he should just only ever be proud of, and never make a joke about.
Absolutely right.
Unless
right.
he wants to make a joke about at Osama's expense, you know.
Exactly. Which he never does. Which he never does. I mean, he never does that.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, those are just two things that didn't get mentioned that I thought were particularly heinous.
I could see that the second would be particularly offensive to someone
absolutely.
In the military.
And also, you know,
who
the Marines.
Are, you know, people who are putting their lives on the line to get something like that done, and then to have a president joke
using
about
that.
And we know, you know, we heard, you know, shortly after that there were some Navy SEALs who were killed in retaliation because
absolutely
of this.
Right.
So they were, you know,
right.
This is not something that was just a complete unabashed positive where we killed him and there were no consequences. There are some men who lost their lives as a result of this. And there he is joking about it. So I definitely
like,
see your point.
I don't like that term out of touch. It's been used by politics, but he truly, truly defines that term.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about out of touch.
Definitely.
Indifferent to America and what those things actually mean. That you're saying.
So Luke, you're a new caller, right? Now you're not allowed to talk about politics that much though, huh?
There's rules about it, but they're not clear. And there's another thing. I mean, it's hard to I don't think the rules are particularly objective. And then at the end of the day, the Uniform Code of Military Justice has the conduct unbecoming article where you can any officer in the military can be court-martialed for conduct unbecoming of an officer and a gentleman, which is never defined. So in the end, they can kind of get you for anything. Which is,
right.
is fair as far as I see it, you know. When there was a Marine recently who got court-martialed and kicked out. He was a Tea Party guy for saying that he wouldn't follow orders from Obama. And I thought I sympathized with the guy in his views in a couple of ways, but he afterward kept saying, oh, they made the wrong decision, I'm innocent, I shouldn't be kicked out, when really what I think he should have been saying is, I'm taking on a risk by talking, and I'm aware of that, and I take responsibility for it.
Right.
If I say something that they can take me out for, you know, he chose to join the military. So,
right.
Yeah.
You know, on Facebook, a lot of the time I post links to things without saying anything about them. That kind of
right.
thing.
And yeah, and that's probably the safest. And I think there are certain jobs where because he is the commander in chief, you cannot make public comments about such things. Yeah,
Debbie has the same thing just crossed her mind. She goes, can we court-martial the commander-in-chief for conduct unbecoming of a gentleman? You know, that's all.
No, yeah, no, nobody can court-martial the commander-in-chief.
And, you know,
I
Robert says more about Obama when I said, you know, he's that overused term out of touch. He goes, more like never in touch, since his entire life has been in academia, politics, abroad. It's true. Yeah.
No, I think it's
nice
true.
Call, Luke.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Yeah. I'm about to go into a story where I criticize him a bit more. So maybe you want to be safe and get off the line.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Take care. Just quickly, this little story that was in the Wall Street Journal, April 26th. A writer named Kimberly Strassel. She tells us that the president has a list, that he's keeping a list of people who have donated to Mitt Romney's campaign. Now, not just your garden variety donors. I mean, you know, if I donated to Mitt Romney's campaign, it would be such a small amount that it wouldn't be worth Barack Obama's time, I assume. But any of the big donors, they are actually singling these people out by name. Okay, so this is the beginning of her article. She says, try this thought experiment. You decide to donate money to Mitt Romney. You want change in the Oval Office, so you engage in your democratic right to send a check. Several days later, Barack Obama, the most powerful man on the planet, singles you out by name. His campaign brands you as a Romney donor, shames you for, quote, betting against America, end quote, and accuses you of having a less than reputable record. The message from the man who controls the Justice Department, which can indict you,
right.
the SEC, which can fine you, and the IRS, which can audit you, is clear. You made a mistake donating that money.
Absolutely right.
And then she goes on to, you know, flash back to Richard Nixon's enemies list and saying that because he had that and it was so exposed and vilified that no president does this anymore, save, of course, Mr. Obama, she says, who acknowledges no rules. Again, acknowledging no rules, acknowledging no authority, no propriety of conduct. This is classic nihilism.
Yep.
She says, this past week, one of his campaign websites posted an item entitled, quote, "Behind the Curtain, A Brief History of Romney's Donors," end quote. This is one of his campaign websites.
Wow.
Going out there smearing Romney's donors. He's the president of the United States. So I encourage you to go ahead and look at the article. It's April 26, Wall Street Journal, Potomac Watch. And towards the end, she talks about the fact that it's going to get worse because the money game is not going as Team Obama wants.
That's right.
The super PACs are helping the GOP to level the playing field, et cetera, so that you can expect more of this. And then she says, towards the end, she says, politics is rough, but a president has obligations that transcend those of a candidate. She says, if Mr. Obama isn't going to act like a president, he bolsters the argument that he doesn't deserve to be one.
That's very good.
Right?
Very good. He's also a loser, and he knows that if he loses this thing, he'll be exposed, and if he loses the next campaign, because that's how he'll define himself anyway. But it's true. I mean, he's like, I can't lose. I can't lose, you know.
Steve in the chat room says this is pure Maoist tactics.
Maoist, sorry.
Public intimidation. I don't like Mitt Romney. I will be reluctantly casting my vote for him, it appears, in the fall, very reluctantly. It's just a measure to buy time, which is something that we talked about with John Bolton.
I was
pleased to tell him. I said, Mr. Bolton, I know you have endorsed Mitt Romney, but the only reason I would be voting for him is to buy time to get a candidate who really deserves to be in that
and
office.
I told him also, I said, the only thing he has going for him is that he's not Obama. And he said, well, isn't that good? Something like that.
Yeah.
Is that a good reason?
He said, that's a very important reason. I don't know. I really hope we're right. And, you know, this is a judgment that we're making that is in a context that is very, very complex.
It is. But hold on. 4 more years of Obama is, who knows how bad. But it will get worse and worse and worse. With Romney, it might hold on enough to get better. And that's it. That's almost guaranteed.
That's all
about Obama.
That's all that we're hoping for. But of course, we plan to hold the Republicans' feet to the fire the entire way. So let me hold a Republican or a supposed Republican or conservative's feet to the fire right now. April 28, 2012, New York Times publishes a story, How Apple Sidesteps Billions in Taxes. And this article, the way I found out about it, is, surprisingly enough, through Drudge,
yeah.
Matt Drudge. He puts this at the top of the right-hand column of his Drudge Report website, which, I mean, yeah, I expect the New York Times to be criticizing big, successful companies like Apple for not paying their quote-unquote fair share in taxes, et cetera.
Fair share.
But I don't expect Drudge to pile on and give the story even more play. You know, in the story, they talk about what Apple does. You know, they put their corporate headquarters in Nevada, or at least for a certain purpose, you know. So then Nevada's got a zero corporate tax rate. California's corporate tax rate is 8.84%. So imagine that they skim off 8.84%. Then the corporations distribute income to actual individual people who then pay income tax on that. And so on. Disgusting, right? This is why you see the drain of business from California. The article here says, Apple serves as a window on how technology giants have taken advantage of tax codes written for an industrial age and ill-suited to today's digital economy.
God.
In other words, as someone on Facebook when I posted this story, ill-suited for the type of looting and plundering that the government wants
age.
To do.
Right.
You know, because the rules have to do with the industrial age and not the modern age.
They're trying to get away from the government's grasp, you know.
Now here's what's at stake. If you go to the next page of the article, they tell you that Apple's federal tax bill, if they hadn't bent these rules, would have likely been $2.4 billion higher last year. So $2.4 billion is what they're going to be quibbling about. Imagine the value that Apple contributes to our economy.
Yep.
And then you're talking about $2.4 billion on the scale of a $1.7 trillion budget.
Right.
I mean, it's disgusting. So I think that that they're quibbling about this at all is anything. Another excerpt from the story, it says, the nation's tax code is based on the concept that a company, quote, earns income where value is created rather than where products are sold, end quote. And to me, that's very revealing. The tax code is meant to grab money whenever value is created. Every time value is created, the government wants to take its chunk. You know, Apple, of course, says it conducts all its business ethically, and there's a bunch of apologetic, we contribute to charity, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of statements also from a college in California called De Anza College, community college that's close to Apple, just laying on the guilt. You know, they do everything they can to pay as few taxes as possible, and yet our community college is going broke, and they also talk about that at the end, just to try to lay on the guilt.
Hmm.
And to me, I say if Apple pays as few taxes as possible,
yes,
good for them.
Absolutely.
Involuntary taxation is completely immoral.
They've earned it.
We're very far from eliminating the income tax. I mean, if we ever even see the elimination of involuntary income tax in any of our lifetimes, we're going to be extremely lucky. But Rand has talked about ways that you can finance voluntarily a government to the extent that a proper government with its functions of police, court, and military,
can
do it.
Can we refer to tax as a tax? No, a tax. I mean,
tax are a tax.
Yeah.
It's theft, is what it is. It's
of course,
theft.
Tax,
and
theft with different
You know, I think it's completely consistent for Apple to say that they are conducting their business with the highest of ethical standards, and at the same time, they're trying to get out of paying as many taxes as they can. Both are totally 100% consistent because taxes are theft. So good for them, and shame on Drudge.
Absolutely.
Shame on Drudge for piling on with respect to Apple. So that's all I had to say there.
If anyone heard Drudge's talk show when he had it on every Sunday, it was pretty lame. I always saw him like a leaf in the wind being blown by the world's events. Nothing to add, nothing to say, really. So that's part of it. But his website is valuable, no doubt.
Yeah, it can be valuable as a news source, but you have to take some of it with a grain of salt because, as I've said numerous times,
misleading titles,
misleading headlines. Another story I posted on the Don't Let It Go on Her page. We'll just talk about it quickly. There was, supposedly, and we think that this probably actually was floated out there by some.
Why wouldn't it have been?
By some Islamic politicians. Let me explain what it is first. So this is a what they called a so-called what do they call it?
What?
You know, I lost the name of what it is because we've been through so many stories. It's the farewell intercourse law.
Yes.
On Jihad Watch, they call it appropriately a necrophilia law, but I wasn't going to introduce it that way. They call it a farewell intercourse law that they have proposed, or some Islamic politicians want to propose in the parliament in Egypt. And what it says is that a man can have sex with the dead corpse of his wife up to 6 hours after she dies.
So even though, I mean, as someone said, I forgot who was, maybe Martin on the Facebook, he said something. Islam won't even let women rest in peace after they're dead.
Yeah. So anyway, the point is that some people doubted whether it was true, and some Egyptian politicians said, oh, I couldn't even imagine something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it must not be true. But all I can tell you is there is a women's group in Egypt who wrote a letter to a high-ranking politician protesting this. There's your evidence that it actually exists. Nobody who has been skeptical that this is a true story has brought forth any evidence that it doesn't. So, you know, unless they do that, I would tend to think I would chalk this up to another ridiculous proposal because of this religion of Islam.
Thanks.
Anyway, we're getting out of time here. If you want to read more about this hideous story, just pop some more Alka-Seltzer, and go to the Don't Let It Go Unheard page on Facebook. By the way, if you do like this show and you want to keep up with me during the week, talk about stories, go to the page and like the page.
And spread the word.
Yeah, and also, yeah, do please spread the word about the show. If you do like the show, share it with your friends. We've got a show with, I think, some good sound this week, so that it's worth passing around.
I hope so.
Last week, we apologized. The sound
was
not
good.
We were
on the road in New York.
On the road. Also, you can like the show here on Blog Talk Radio as well. You can follow it. So thanks very much. Have a good week, and we will see you next time.
Take care.
Take care.